Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Well, Mr. Chair, may I ask Mr. Walsh to do something then?
Oh, I can call it later.
Okay.
Looking at...
So, Mr. Chairman, do we have to change language here, though, to ensure that this is a $3,000 per family, or how did you want to handle that?
Mike, why don't you...
I have a suggestion, Mr. Chairman. I was scribbling while we were talking here. If on line, on page 19, line 28, after the word designed, we just add a new clause here. And the one I have is designed to impose a family deductible of $3,000 for all covered health care services other than prematernal care, preventive care, and immunizations, and to allow reimbursement. So it's clear that we have a deductible of $3,000, but it doesn't include those three categories. And then we have a reimbursement level after that $3,000 of 80% with our exceptions.
Okay. Does anyone understand the amendment? Is there, that would be, wait, where are we? Is that amendment number 14?
15.
I'll move that as amendment number 15. Is there objection to amendment number 15? Okay, hearing none, it's adopted. Let's go to page 2, last page of Dr. Wilson's. Senator Duncan.
Yeah, page that comment on page 20, line 4 through 5. Actually, that's a real good point that Dr. Wilson has. Large families. Large. I mean, it's really, I guess it's one way to keep families from getting large, but there's already large families, right? And it is very expensive for a large family. If you have six children, that would be $300 right there. Plus the spouse, $350, plus the husband, $450. I just wondered if you'd considered some type of a sliding scale on that.
We can get as elaborate as we want. And it would be my preference to keep it this way for now. It's easy to understand. I'm sure that if we have costs in front of us, there can be a policy call, and we can look at the amount of break we want to give large families. There always is the 14% of income escape valve. And so there will be a policy call there of whether we want to pick up the costs of large families even beyond the 14% the break, which is already there. How about the next one about rating lifestyles? Does anyone want to offer an amendment on the lifestyles question? Through 31.
Which page are we in? 125 through 31.
The suggestion in 25 through 31. I'll offer, to get it on the table, I don't mind offering that. This would be to change the reference to one doctor of medicine and one doctor of osteopathy to two physicians licensed under 0864. And to add a... Let's see. He also suggests adding a public member. Just... I don't feel that's necessary, but... I'll offer as an amendment number 16, page 21, lines 26 and 27, be reworded to read two physicians licensed under AS 0864.
So you're not moving the discouraging comments about chiropractors and osteopaths?
No.
Where's that?
It's just Rod's editorial comments.
Okay. Okay, is there any objection to that? Number 16. I'm just reading the rest of, let me just say, the rest, page 22, lines 9 through 22. Does anyone have any amendments they want to offer on 1 through 6 there?
Well, Mr.
Yeah, Senator Duncan.
Actually, not 1 through 6. I guess I was just looking at Section 17, Medical Practice Advisory Committee. This committee is to recommend medical malpractice parameters. Medical practice parameters. What do you mean by medical practice parameters? So this is not a tort reform committee as such, is what you're saying, right?
This is something that caught my eye, something that Maine, state of Maine, and some other states have been looking at, is to try to spell out practice parameters which help define what acceptable practice is, to help as an alternative to having it defined by the courts through a series of malpractice cases.
I guess the point of my question was, and I was trying to figure out exactly what their duties are, they're going to be recommending legislation. Why don't we have a consumer on here, or somebody from the trial attorneys, or why do we have just providers?
Senator, the reason that it's drafted that way is because this seemed like a fairly technical committee that's just getting into the nuts and bolts of healthcare.
They won't be getting, but I guess my concern is this committee might get into
policy recommendations
on non-economic cap on non-economic damages, for example, or a lot of other. And I just don't see this committee being that narrowly charged. And it seems to me that even practice parameters, consumers probably have interest in that. And it also would seem to me that if you're going to use practice parameters to help eliminate medical malpractice claims, you would probably want an attorney, a trial attorney, involved in that discussion as to whether it would or would not. Or I guess I see it too narrow with just providers on there.
Okay. Do you have a suggestion?
No. I just think it's too narrow. I guess we can either increase it to we got on there now, 4. And it's not my piece of legislation, but I guess I didn't understand the purpose as I reviewed this, Mr. Chairman, for the just the providers. I want to express that concern more than anything. I don't have a minute.
Dr. Wilson, I know you're on teleconference. We've gotten through your memo. Is there any statement you'd like to make on anything that we did on your letter, where we go on to any other amendments?
We put him to sleep.
Let's see if he's on. Hang on. Okay, he's on his way. While he's on his way to be put online, are there any other amendments by the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I have one.
Okay.
Well, we.
Yeah, Dr. Wilson, why don't you go ahead? We obviously tried to work through your letter and didn't accept everything. I hope that you'd understand we're trying to get through as much as we can, but I'd like to invite you to testify on anything which we failed to adopt of your language or which we did adopt.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I think we have made progress. Back on page 6, the amendment that you adopted, number 5, having to do with the expert advisor. It appears to me
Could you repeat that question, Dr. Wilson? I couldn't follow what you were saying.
On page 6, line 8, 9, 10, 11, category 4, you adopted amendment number 5, which changed the language to read, I believe, and an action for damages due to personal injury or death based upon the provision of professional by health care provider after the parties have completed arbitration of the claim under the court's appointment. Expert advisor.
Yes.
The idea was originally in this and other fields and the task force and CHIP and so forth was to have a single medical advisor, expert advisor, for the use of the arbitration. And the way that you have changed it, I believe, would wait until, I guess, the appeal or something, and then have expert advisor. Is that your intention?
Yes, it was, although I was certainly willing to listen to arguments why we shouldn't, because I think the idea is to try to give the arbitrator a chance before we get into the first stages of a full-blown court proceeding, of which the expert advisor seemed to manifest as the first step in that process.
Well, as I understand it, Mr. Chairman, the settlement or decision or finding or whatever it is of a medical malpractice, it always takes expert testimony and decided without expert testimony because it's a technical matter. And as the task force and the CHIPRA people agreed with this, and as advised by Professor Metzloff from Duke, the arbitrator needs to have his expert, and the expert advisor was to be appointed right off as soon as the law case is filed. The lawsuit is filed, the expert gets to work, makes his opinion hopefully within 20 days, certainly no more than 60 days, and that is the expert testimony that the arbitrator and you, so you can have other opinion too, but if the idea was not to do away with the expert advisor for the arbitration.
Okay.
I think you've done it. And one other thing on the C, I think that you may have this term a little bit wrong. The hard work is the expert advisor going through all the records, consulting other treatises and so forth, and writing the expert advisor's opinion. That's what's worth $500. Going to court later or being deposed where you've changed it from $150 to $300 to $500, that's not where all the hard work is. That's a pain in the neck to doctors to have to do that, but the hard work is this part, and in the past, the three-person expert panel has been only entitled to travel expenses and per diem, and for 18 years, the panel, by and large, has never even bothered to bill for the premium or part of the day here. That's where the $500 pay should be.
Okay, so, Dr. Wilson, I hear your 2 points. I am willing to offer to remove back amendment number 5 back out because I'd like to just hear from Mike Ford. I was trying to understand from Mike Ford how it works, and we didn't know either. So, Mike, do you have any comment on that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, two things. One, if we create this mandatory arbitration provision, the arbitrator can consult with medical specialists. So the question really is, how do the two processes overlap, if they overlap at all? The amendment the committee adopted just means that the core process doesn't begin until they finish the arbitration process. And if they are unable to settle it by arbitration, then you go into the core process. That triggers the medical expert. And it's a policy call by the committee.
If the people in the field, or Dr. Wilson, I'm sure, has experience there, say that it's really as useful for the expert advisor's information to be available to the arbitrator. I have no problem with moving to rescind amendment number 5. Is that would stand alone. We could still have number 4, but take out number 5. I would move to rescind our action in adopting amendment number 5 then. This is the one which set the sequence of events that the arbitration occurred prior to the expert advisor.
Oh, I see.
And could be used in court.
I mean, that's separate, different issue.
Okay.
Is there any objection to removing that back out? Everyone understand the... And okay, no objection. Number 5 has been rescinded. Now, on the other one, this was the one about how to compensate the expert advisor, where there was a difference between the expert witness fee, which appears on page 8, line 11, and the actual entitlement to compensation while the expert advisor is researching the case. So we did misinterpret that. What amendment was that? Betty, do you remember? Just so we have it labeled correctly.
Yes, what, number 12?
Was number 12? Okay, just for starters, I'd like to move to rescind amendment number 12, and then we'll address putting the compensation up above. Is there any objection to rescinding number 12? Okay. I'd like to move a revised number 12, which is to say that the expert advisor on page 8, line 6, is entitled to add the words a stipend of $500 and.
Mr. Chairman?
A daily stipend. No, Mr. Ford.
Could we say a fee? A
sure.
Fee of $500.
A fee?
Yes.
Okay. So amendment number revised 12 would be the expert advisor is entitled to a fee of $500 and travel expense. Is there any objection to revised amendment number 12? Okay. Amendment number 12 is adopted. Senator Duncan, Dr. Wilson, does that conclude your testimony?
Mr. Chairman, all I was saying is, it didn't catch on the medical advisory committee. Did you add a public member and make it 5 rather than 4?
No.
I too believe that I'll have a public member and perhaps a lawyer on it because there are legal duties here, particularly with regard to the antitrust provisions, medical people are not competent to research or decide about that.
Okay. I would point out that that committee does have the ability to contract for expert advice as a committee. So, but we can consider that. Is there anything else you wanted to say, Dr. Wilson? We are being called onto the floor of the Senate in a few minutes here. We have to.
No, sir. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Senator Duncan, you have circulated an amendment which is forward 33094, letter J, point 13.
Yes.
Would you like to move that?
Yeah. I mean, you want to do it now, or do we have to go to the floor? How do you want to handle this?
Oh, we have to go to the floor at some point.
Pretty substantial amendment, so it's going to take some discussion. I can either do that now and start the discussion and then repeat it when we come back, or we can...
How long of discussion do you think
it'll take? I'll move the amendment.
Okay.
Object.
Let's just take stock of what else we have. Senator Ellis, you have an amendment? Has it been circulated?
Yes, I believe so.
Let's see. I'm just trying to get an assessment of what time we need.
Senator
Sharp?
I'm saving it for finance.
I've had enough.
Oh, okay.
For a while.
Okay.
Do you mind telling us?
I've been a bit out.
Preview?
Yeah, I know what they are. They're sick with compliance. Well, okay. See, that's the problem. Everything changes.
Senator Duncan, you want to speak to your amendment for some period of time? Is that
what you're saying? What would be your intention then? Because I do want to be able to speak to it, yes.
Okay. What I would do then, I will recess the committee. I'll ask Mike to draft a CS which has all the amendments we've adopted to date. And we will reconvene after the joint session tomorrow to finish up and we can take up this amendment, which is number 17.
Sure. And Mr. Chairman, if he's going to redraft the CS, then I'm not going to have this amendment redrafted necessarily.
Oh, no, and we'll accept it as being drafted.
Right here.
And the same with Senator Ellis's number 18. And we'll take, I would entertain if someone wants to have an amendment drafted up on the public health provisions which are recommended, I would certainly entertain those. And that will recess till after the joint session tomorrow, Tuesday.